Indeed it is. We're going to come back in a moment, but Josh will go right back to you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Friday was the first day of spring, and some areas in the Northeast were getting blasted with snow again. It just doesn't stop. What a year. Unbelievable. Okay, let's go back to Josh in Texas. He was telling us about the USS Lexington, which was during World War II. It's been mothballed now. But go ahead, Josh. You were just getting into the good stuff.
Oh, yes, George. I really was just getting into the good stuff. Now, on top of me feeling like I was being watched and followed throughout the night, two other key components, I guess, of what you call weirdness occurred. Two things that could not be explained by me or the team. First off, throughout the night, our lead investigator, Dan, and I were walking around our base camp area. Now, the weird thing was, while we were walking around, we were there alone, and we heard a loud metallic bang. You know, it sounded like sheet metal, a piece of sheet metal, a giant piece, fell over. And we heard it. We didn't know where it came from. And we called out to see if any of our crew members were around. No one was there. And I remembered there was one room that had a piece of the sheet metal lying against the wall. Well, when we went to go investigate, we saw that all the pieces were still against the wall. There were no freestanding pieces that could have fallen over because it's a liability on the USS Lexington.
Sure.
You know, because they have tour groups go through that part that we were in. So while we were there, we were checking. We looked on the cameras, and no one was around. We had static night vision cameras set up, and, I mean, there was just no one else there. That's one thing that couldn't be explained. Another thing was when we were all together, we were taking about a 10-minute break at our base camp. We noticed that one of our cameras was giving our monitor an indication that there was motion around that camera. Our cameras like I said, it's a night vision camera.
We're very sensitive too, weren't they?
Yes, sir. And it also has a motion sensor in it. So anytime anyone moves around that camera, a little indicator will show up on our screen via the DVR system and monitor. Well, no one was around that camera, but yet we were getting the indication that there was someone moving around it. And here's the weird thing. The weird thing is we were talking amongst ourselves, and as I looked back at the monitors, I noticed that the camera angle suddenly changed. I went to go investigate, and I saw that the camera had actually fallen over. Huh. Now, the weird thing is that these cameras are so light, and they're set up on tripods. Now, this tripod that had fallen over could not have fallen over because no one had tripped over wires. No one had bumped into it because we were all together, and all the legs on the tripod were still fully extended and locked into place.
Something had to bump it or push it.
Exactly. Now, that's exactly what I thought, and that's what I suggested to the team because, I mean, no one was around it. That's the only thing that we could think of was that someone had to come by and bump it, whether it be a spirit or an actual person, but we did not catch anyone on any of our cameras. We had all these angles set up to where we'd see someone walking through.
And nothing, huh?
Nothing, George.
Jeez. You know what? These entities do have the power to move things. Telekinesis, it happens through the ghostly realm. People can even do that sometimes. Barbara's in Honolulu, west of the Rockies. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good evening.
Fine. How are
My
you?
Girlfriend Judy from back in Pennsylvania tuned me into your show, and I'm really thrilled to be on it.
Okay. You thank Judy for us, would you?
I certainly will.
So did President Obama buy a house near Honolulu?
No, he didn't buy it. As a matter of fact, he's sort of a little bit of a not welcome, too much security.
Too much,
over
yeah.
There when he comes, so
I'm not sure.
Rather him stay on your side of the river. I would like to share with you a story, George.
Okay.
We were seniors in high school, and we were having a party, a New Year's Eve party at our house. I'm sorry, New Year's night party at our house. And we were all at a dance earlier. And we left the dance, my boyfriend and I, and it was snowing out. And my friends were all coming to the party, and there was a car accident in front of our home. And a little known God. In the car was my cousin, my best friend, and their dates. And my girlfriend landed on our front lawn, and she was dead. Her face was totally ripped off.
Oh, jeez.
My cousin landed across in the field. She was in the hospital for 6 months.
Horrible.
Now, the story goes, we lived in the home. We just bought the home. And we had pictures. We all, Lynn, Sandra, my sister, and I were all christened together. The whole, what do you call it?
Your whole group.
The three of you, when you wear your white gowns, not the christening, the
confirmation.
First communion.
First communion, see, first communion, you're in second grade, right?
Right.
Confirmation, you're in your
pictures.
Fourth grade. Something like
we
that.
We had pictures of the three of us on the TV, and they were all connected. The frame was connected, and the frame would automatically slide to the beginning of the television, fall, and Lynn's picture would be the only picture that would crack. Now, we also had in our bedroom, Lynn always used to sit on, remember those old, like a beanbag would be, but they were squarish. And she would always sit on one of those. And we had three of them, it would go down as if somebody was sitting on it. And then a little while later, the air would come up.
It would go back up again.
Then the third thing that would happen is, we had in our rec room downstairs the stereo set, and it would always go on, and we would go down, shut it off, go back up to bed, it would come back on again. So I always knew that Lynn was still with us.
Did it play a certain song or anything like that?
Just, you know, any song.
See, if it played her favorite song, then something really is strange.
You know, it might have been, but I don't remember. You know, we're talking about, I'm 65, will be, and this was when I was like 18, 17. So it's hard to remember, but I always still feel her with me.
Oh, yeah.
And still pray for her.
Always will be. Hey, thanks.
I have to share that with you and your listeners, because I think it's a wonderful show. I'm so happy to find you guys.
Well, it's a great place to be out there in Hawaii, and they have finished the studio. It is done. Now I just got to get my tail up there. Tom's got me too busy going all over the other side of the country. I can't get over there yet. Hey, George, you got an event next week here in Cleveland, this and that. I'm everywhere. By the way, I'm going to be in Kent, Ohio in a couple months. So just keep tracking me. I'm everywhere this year, everywhere. Going to be in, listen to this, Vancouver, San Mateo, Contact in the Desert and Joshua Tree, Los Angeles, Kent, Ohio, New Orleans, St. Louis. And it goes on and on and on. Scottsdale. That's a lot. Dan in St. Louis, speaking of St. Louis, welcome to the program. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hi.
Since you're from the 314, my sister is the head of the Coldwater Creek Group and the Westlake Landfill Group.
Okay.
Would you be interested in talking about that?
Talking to them?
Well, yes. You know, it's about the Manhattan Project and what happened here on the corner of Lindbergh and McDonald Boulevard.
What happened there?
That's where they built everything. That's where they built the F-18s. I mean...
Oh, yeah, they still do. They still do build fighter jets there.
Yeah, that's... where I'm at right now.
Are you working there?
I was a month ago, and now I quit that job because union this, that, so
no,
on.
No, Boeing still has that, right?
Well, they just put another name on the building, so I left.
Huh. What are you doing?
It is a very good job, but, I mean, it's in your backyard, man. Westlake Landfill.
Oh, yeah.
Water Creek.
We'll check it out. We'll check it out. I know it's there. It's a big story, actually, but it's very complicated. Minnesota we go. Cohasset, Minnesota. Hey, Matthew, go ahead. Where is Cohasset?
Cohasset? Oh, way up north near Canada. Oh,
way up there. Okay.
Yeah, well, a couple hours from Canada. Anyway, first, before I get this theory that I kind of came up with after listening to one of your programs, I just wanted to say thanks for the Insider program. My friend John said, hey, it's the best $55 you'll ever spend. And he's right. I've been listening. I've been an Insider for 3 years now, and I highly recommend it.
Let me ask you something. Let me pull you. I'm thinking of putting a camera, oh, I'm going to, in the studio and to turn it on and chat with you before the show starts. What do you think of that? Would you be interested in that?
You know, that would be kind of interesting. That'd be a first, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody does anything like that.
Nobody does it before the show. You know, a lot of Rush has what his while he's doing it. But
Right.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. But anyways, what's going on in Minnesota?
Well, at least it's finally warming up and getting rid of the snow. So it's a long winter, but
sure was.
Anyways, go ahead.
It was a long winter. Too long.
Oh, yeah. Last year's was worse, but this one's a little bit shorter. This is good. Anyway, I was listening to one of your programs once, and you know how time always seems to be speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned it before, and this one guy who was on said that he felt like the universe was actually like a expanding bubble. And so I started thinking, if the universe is expanding like a bubble, maybe time might even have its own particle, and the particle is being compressed like the Doppler effect does the sound. And you know how the sound will speed up because if you have like a moving train blowing its whistle, it seems like the whistle is at a higher shrill until it passes.
You're right.
It actually compresses the sound. So maybe time is being compressed too by the expanding universe.
Something's happening with time because you're right. It is, Matthew, going too fast. Too fast.
It is going faster all the time.
I mean, we're going into April already. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can. It's I'm waiting for it. I'll be 62, and maybe I'll try to retire.
don't retire. What are you going to do if you retire?
Go south where it's warmer in the winter.
Okay, hey, thanks for the call. No, I can't believe this. I thought last year was fast. This year is even faster. I mean, when you're in April, then you're very close to May, and then it rolls along. Jeffrey in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Welcome to Coast, Jeffrey.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I was just calling to see if Sandy Hook is still a subject you're willing to discuss on your program.
Yeah, I don't believe it was a false flag, but of course, if you want to, I don't muffle anybody.
Oh, I don't think you do. I just know Clyde Lewis got threatened. He said he won't discuss it anymore because he got threatened, and that was the last we heard about it on his show.
Huh.
But if you do have a show, I'd like to suggest Wolfgang Halbig and Sophia Smallstorm.
Would you email that to me?
Yes.
George at coasttocoastam.com.
Will do.
Okay, great.
Show set up with both of them.
Wolfgang, I've heard of. Now, and I'll explain some things to a lot of people. There are some people who believe that the Sandy Hook tragedy, where all those kids got shot and killed, never happened. Never happened at all. And I find that hard to believe. To me, it happened. Not every story is a conspiracy. I think you have to look at everything for possibilities. You have to question who did what and why. But I think that happened. Cecilia has been waiting in Roseville, California, first-time caller. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm nervous. It's the first time I've talked to you, and I'm so glad to talk to you.
Don't be nervous. You'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, when I moved up here to Sacramento to be with my husband, we rented this house before we bought the house we live in now. And whenever he would go out to his jobs, took him out of town, out of state, out of the country quite often. And I would be there with my son, just me and him at this house. And it was an L-shaped house. and inside the L was all glass windows. And there used to be, when I would go to bed, my bedroom would be across from the bathroom, and the door would be open, and I would see a man walk, what I thought was a man, walk by. I could see his, you know, his figure, just his head, and then he wore a hat.
That's kind of uncomfortable.
Yes, it was very uncomfortable. And then he started coming in the house. And I called the cops on him so many times that they thought I was going nuts. They started shining light, their flashlights in my eyes and stuff.
I mean, what did you tell the cops when you called?
Well, I finally called when, you know, he broke a window, this man. He broke a window. But I would call him up and I would say, there's a man in my house. There's a man in my house. And they would come over there, and they got to where they came over there so many times they would surround the whole block area before they even would come to the house trying to trap this person, whoever I was seeing. You know, and I told him, I says, you know, there is somebody there. And they would tell me, no, no, no. And then one time he broke a window. And then I called the cops out, and they tried to tell me that the one of my cats had to have broken the window, which didn't make any sense because it was broken from the inside out, you know? And so it's like, no, that can't be the case. My cats are not inside
you out. Know? Who do you and think then, this person was?
Well, I finally did some research on the house and to find out what was going on, because my husband even was beginning to think I was insane. And, So I found out that there was the people that lived there before. It was an older man. He was sitting out on the front driveway, and he had died of a heart attack there in his rocking chair. Yeah.
And he's still hanging around.
Well, you know what?
Breaking windows.
Yeah, but I think that was a mistake, because he used to do other things. He didn't like that I would smoke in the house, and he would move the ashtrays around. And then he would open cabinet doors, you know, in the kitchen. I don't know why he would do that. But, you know, it just seemed to me, well, he started coming to in front of my bedroom door. That's when I was freaked out. I started putting a loaded gun, believe it or not, underneath my pillow, and I had my son there with me. That's how terrified I was.
My God, but a gun won't work against a ghost.
No, it won't, but I didn't know it was a ghost at the time, you know. And anyway, he would come to the doorway, but he would just stand in the doorway. He never came in. He never came into my bedroom. And then my husband finally saw him one night. I told him, he's here, he's here. And so I woke him up, because usually he was there when my husband wasn't there, you know. And so I woke up my husband, and he looked at the guy. He actually saw him. And I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm not crazy. And then he sat up. My husband, I never sat up. I was too terrified. But he sat up, and he noticed that the guy he didn't touch the floor. There were no real feet there and stuff. And then he goes, oh my God. And then the guy disappeared, you know.
Poof,
and,
just like that.
Yeah. And then, but he continued to come back and open the cupboard doors, and I'd see him now and then and stuff. But this, I believe anyway, this man was very lonely, and I'm not sure he knew he was dead. I think he was more like lonely and looking for his wife.
Maybe he thought you were the wife.
Yeah. Well, he never came in the bedroom, so I don't know.
He never came in the bedroom when he was married.
Yeah, maybe not. Who knows?
All right. Know, hey, thanks.
That was trippy.
Appreciate that. We're going to come back in a moment and talk about the passing of a Coast to Coast guest in a moment with a little tribute to Ron Garner. We counted up how many Coast to Coast guests have died over the last 12 years, going on 13, just when I've been doing the program. The number is astronomical. I'm talking about some great guests. Anyways, we'll be back in a moment with that tribute. Well, we lost another great guest. Ron Garner passed away from cancer some few days ago. He was a good man. He was with me April of 2014. Wrote a couple books, Alien Disclosure at Area 51 and Anonymous about the CIA. He brought awareness of UFOs and ETs and passed away content that he did his share. In a moment, a special interview tribute with Ron Garner. Ron, this is, I think, your first appearance on Coast to Coast, is it not?
Yes, it's first appearance. Glad to be with you, George. I want to compliment you and your staff. You have a great show, and I often tell people you get a PhD education listening to Coast to Coast.
You know what? We actually tried, Ron, to get some degree credits for people. And,
did you really?
We weren't able to pull that off yet, but you're right. I think you hear things from stories from people like you, and you get that degree in whatever field that the expert is talking about.
Yeah, if I'd been in your neck of the woods, I'd have been listening to you because I'm a night owl myself. I go back to Ray Bream on ABC. And,
oh, sure.
And all the people, of course, Art Bell, all through the years, made a point of it. I never missed any of his shows.
You have been studying this now for a long, long time. Beyond that little situation when you were 12, what really got you involved in this?
Well, when that happened, I was in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I was with my aunt and uncle on a ranch there. They had horses. I loved horses. And when that newspaper came out at the dinner table, I remember my uncle said, and he was a World War Marine veteran and a hero back then, and he said, the Army can't tell the difference between a weather balloon and a flying saucer. Uh-huh. And so from that point on, I started collecting newspaper articles, and I had a neighbor that gave me my first book, Flying Saucer Planet by George Adamski, and I knew people out at Giant Rock, and went on from there.
And you were hooked, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I was hooked. This is the biggest story in history, and I often tell people that Area 51 S4, to me, is the same as Devil's Mountain was to Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. I started back in 83. I was working for a mortgage company, and we went to lunch with the woman manager, and she said her brother worked at Area 51. I said, oh, really? And she said, yes, you can talk to him. So I talked to him, and he said he was a low-level, like a welder or something, and he walked by one of the being's offices there, and he had one blue sock and one red sock, and the place was messed up, books all over, and he went in and said to this being, why don't you straighten this place up? And the being said to him, hey, look, fella, I just put on this body every day like you put on your coveralls, so get out of here and don't bother me. And from that, from 83, then with Bob Lazar, I have a lot of friends in Las Vegas, and Lazar was on in 89, and then Bill Uhouse in 93, and then on and on. And all of these different people that I've interviewed and put on tape, they all corroborate each other, and there's no discrepancies. And, Bob Lazar, I know him. I was at
What do you think of, people like Bob Lazar? Do you think they're legitimate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know Stanton Friedman, one of your favorite people.
I love him.
He's great. But I mentioned to Stan that Bob had passed three lie detector tests, and he didn't even know that. But I'm very close to John Lear, and John Lear was with Bob Lazar all the way through. I can do a lot of information about him. But the main thing that I've been focusing on in the last 11, 12 years is Area 51 S4. Now, that's where I tell all of you UFO researchers, that's where you should target your freedom of information, is Area 51 S4.
Now, what's the S4 mean, Ron?
That's a designation. It's 15 miles southwest of Groom Lake proper. And that's where all the hot stuff is. That's where the nine craft are. That's where the bodies are, both alive and dead. There's a five-level area there. Then I have that on my website right now.
Is it underground or
underground.
Is it covered?
Five levels down.
All right.
And I can go through each level. We can talk about that.
But sure.
But the main thing is level number five is where this J-Rod person was. And Dr. Dan Burrish, Crane, microbiologist, that he's almost like my stepson. I've interviewed him.
And what was his name? Was it Dan Burrish or was it Dan Crane? Because I get two different names for the same guy.
Yeah, Dan Crane was his given name at birth. And then he married a woman with the last name Burrish who had a child by a former relationship.
So he took her name.
Yeah, so he changed it to Burrish, but now it's back to Crane. I was with him in the court when he did it.
Okay, so he's still around.
He's still around. He was 50 years old on February the 2nd.
Okay. So these various levels. Let's go through these five levels, first of all, that are there. And when do you think, Ron, they built them?
My information, it was built as a offensive biowarfare facility back in the early 50s. And John Lears told me that the Corps of Engineers took off the top of Papoose Mountain and built all these five levels, put the mountaintop back on top of it. Then there's the five hangar bays. I think most people know about that, that John Lear talked about, and Bill Uhouse. So, you know, that's why I say each one that I talk to don't know each other. They've never met each other, and they all tell the same story. So that's corroboration for me.
Okay, let's start from, I guess, top level down or bottom level up. What do you want to do?
Well, I like the bottom level because that's the, I predict, George, that and this I'm going out on a limb to say this, but I think 2014 is the disclosure year.
And really?
I'll explain
right.
Why. No, I know you don't buy that. But,
no, you know, listen, I'd love disclosure to come. I just don't think it's going to come from government.
Yeah, no, I know. But there's some significant things just happened. I think it was Rockefeller who said that nothing in government happens accidentally.
That's true.
So, you know, Bill Clinton was on the Jimmy Kimmel show like a week and 10 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and he brought up Area 51. And then Obama, about 3.5 months ago, was with Shirley MacLaine, and he mentioned Area 51. Now, that's very significant that our sitting president and a past president just in the last 4 months talked about Area 51.
True. Good point.
And last August, I was on a radio show and talking about Area 51, and 3 days later, the CIA comes out and discloses that there is an Area 51. Now, I can't prove that I instigated that, but I think I had some influence.
Strange timing, and as I say, no coincidences,
no,
Ron.
No, that's right. So the bottom level, the five level, is called the ambassadorial suite, and that's where this J-Rod person had been kept captured for over 50 years. And they call him the ambassador. So, I mean, it's a quasi-alien embassy.
Was this a Roswell ET?
No, this was a Kingman, Arizona ET.
Okay.
He crashed in 1953, and there were three beings on there. And Dr. Dan Burris, I have all this on my website, said that there were three beings. One was, they're all from the future, they're future humans. One was from 52,000 years in the future. The other one was from 45,000 years. And the 45,000 years, those two went to Los Alamos. And the one, the 52,000, the one that we call codename J-Rod, his real name was KLA. So Dan interacted with that J-Rod at Area 51. And that J-Rod was there, and they were interrogating him. They treated him abominably because they didn't allow him to wear clothing. They kept him in a clean sphere, and the clean sphere was filled with oxygen, nitrogen, and about 5% hydrogen because that was the atmosphere that he was used to from the Zeta Reticuli system that he came from. So they interrogated him, and Dr. Dan Burris took tissue samples from this being, and that. You know, scientific explanation is on my site, Area 51 J-Rod, under Q94 document. You can download it. And it's the actual scientific description of an extraterrestrial's genome. And so all of my websites have downloadable information. I've designed it that way because this is so far out that the researchers want to see his credentials. So I always start by saying, Linda Howe has verified this too. I think she's been on your show with you.
Yeah, I think she talked to Burris a long time ago, didn't she?
Yeah. I kind of set that up. And she was with him out there in Frenchman's Mountain. That's a whole other story by itself. But she verified what I have on my website. I had about 95 different documents. His transcripts, his PhD, all that. I cut it down to 43, so it's on there now, Dan Burris's credentials. So we can
What did you think of him, Ron, you know, as you were getting to know who he was?
Well, he has such a marvelous personality. He's, you know, very sensitive. Like when he was working at UNLV with the mice. They had a part of their protocol was to cut off the toes of the mice.
Oh, so
he was so sensitive, he would smuggle the mice out of the laboratory in his briefcase
to save them. Huh?
To save them, yeah, that's how sensitive he is about it. And when he was working with this J-Rod person, he would insert a needle into the upper appendage and take tissue samples, and there was no pain medicine, and so Dr. Burrish would feel the same pain as a J-Rod felt.
My gosh.
And then he would take that tissue samples, put it in a vial, send it up to the microbiologist in the third level up. They would analyze it, send it back down to him. He would re-inject it into the J-Rod, trying to cure him of a neuropathy disease. Because this J-Rod came back in time to try and help his species by undergoing this treatment. And they didn't weren't completely successful, but they were partly successful. And
did we capture that J-Rod and we just wouldn't let him go?
Yeah, what happened was, and this is confusing to people, that the craft didn't really crash. It was on its way to Los Alamos in 1953, and there was some anomaly in the guidance system, and it came down in Kingman, Arizona. And most people know about Roswell, but a lot of people don't know about Kingman. But if you go there and talk to the old-timers, they'll tell you what happened there in 1953. So this is something that ufology doesn't really understand, that there are – this is my research tells me that there's been regular craft going to Los Alamos on a regular basis. And Edward Teller was there, and Bill Uhouse was there, and Dr. Dan Burrish was there, sitting in a boardroom at Los Alamos back in the early 90s, and there were ET engineers that were explaining how to build alien reproduction vehicles. And Bill Uhouse was the person who, he was a Marine fighter pilot in World War II, and he went to Wright-Patterson, and they hired him as a contractor to help build simulators. So they were taking the alien craft, back engineering it. They had to raise it by 3 feet, and because our pilots are a lot bigger than the 4 foot ET people. So Bill Uhouse would do that. And when they got us stuck, when our engineers, the avionics, were stuck, he would ask the alien engineer, well, how do you do this? And he would give him the formula. And I don't know if you know about Ben Rich and his, I'm trying to make a documentary about that one.
I do not know who he is.
Yeah, he was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works.
Okay, know about that.
And he made a speech at Wright-Patterson. I have a copy of his speech. At the very end, he said, we have a contract from the Air Force to take E.T. home. So that's Ben Rich. And we have...
Why didn't E.T. ever come back and get them or take J-Rod away?
I wondered about that myself, but I think that this was a plan. You know, they live, I don't know, 400 or 500 years, so 50 years on Earth was not that difficult. And people always ask me, well, how many different races are there? And people say 57 or 120 or whatever. I only say that I know from three people, that's Bob Lazar, Dan Burrish, and Bill Uhouse, they all identified three different races. And so I only say things if I have corroboration. If I just have one statement, I never say that. But if I have, as an investigative journalist, I say, I prefer two and possibly three corroborations. So that's what I've done all the way through, and I produced all these videos that, I've written a couple of books, and they're at the publisher right now, but black ink on white paper doesn't cut it. You know, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Sure.
And when you see these people, Dan Burrish, Bill Uhouse, Bob Lazar, tell their story, I mean, it's powerful.
What are they doing now? What's Burrish doing now? What's Lazar doing now?
Lazar, I just talked to John Lear yesterday, and I asked him that question because I thought you would ask me, and he said he's in Michigan. That's where his present wife's family is, so he's there, and he has contracts with the military. There's a funny story about Bob Lazar, if you want to hear it.
Is he like a freelancer or what?
Yeah, he has his own company. It's called Nuclear something. If you just Google, you know, Google knows everything. Okay.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. In the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, to Coast to Coast.